What is up, everybody? Welcome to the Game Diaries podcast. I'm Michelle Morrow.
And I'm Miss Harvey. How are you, Michelle?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. Really good. We have to talk right away about something that's bugging me.
Let's do it. What's bugging?
So this morning I did my black line. So you have to, if you're not on YouTube, you have to imagine this. I had a black line on my eyes and it was like just a little off on the left.
So then like eyeliner?
Yeah. So then I made it bigger and then it was just a little off on the right. And then I made it bigger. And Michelle, I did that for like 30 minutes and I hate it. And I didn't want to erase everything. So
I like it. It's fine.
So it's super thick.
You're just very glam today.
It's really ugly, guys.
But it's not ugly.
If we acknowledge it right from the beginning, we can move on instead of thinking about it the whole show. So
that's why
I have a really ugly eyeliner. But we're fortunate. It looks good. We're not on TV live, so we can just have an ugly eyeliner and
that's true. We just, right before this, we did our postscript with Cuddlecore, and I was crying, and I, like, my eyeliner got down over here on the side, and I just had all this, like, black goo down here, like, yeah.
Like Julie Giuliani.
Yeah. Oh, my God, that guy.
He created a new trend, you know?
Yeah. He's just like, your makeup rolling down your face.
Just embrace it.
What have you been playing this week, Steph?
I played a game called Mini Metro.
What's that?
So I'm trying to do a little more indie games on my YouTube. And there was a fall Steam sale, right? So I just went there and I looked at, some of the price. And Mini Metro was like $4. So I'm like, all right, let's try it. There's good reviews. It was so fun. So
really?
Yeah, I'm actually going to keep playing. So first of all, it just starts. You open the game and you're in the game. Like, there's no menu.
Okay.
It's just like you're live. There's no tutorial or anything. Later on, there's a menu and everything, but they just like put you in the game right away. So that was already yes for me. And the goal is to manage your metro. So you start with like a line and you have kind of a budget of resources. And people take your metro and they want to get to like station A to station B. And then all of a sudden, because you have a metro, there's more people that want to take the metro. So you have to like make the metro bigger. And it's just such a cute little experience. I think it's
just like a little metro sim
ish. But like, it's like you look at a metro map.
Oh, interesting.
So it's not like a SimCity like crazy.
Right.
It's really just the map. And they put you in real life cities, like London and stuff, but it's not like you see London, you see just a river, and they tell you like it's the London River. It's very interesting. It's worth the $4.
That's it. Yeah.
It's $4. And also the music that comes with it is really awesome. Cause it's like a experiential music. So everything that happens on the screen creates a music.
Oh, very cool.
Very cool. So I've been playing that. And what about you?
I am deep in World of Warcraft.
Oh, yeah. You're right. Because forget.
The new expansion, the raiding starts this coming week. Actually, the day this podcast come out is the first day of raids in Shadowlands.
Okay.
So this weekend is going to be like my husband and I are going to be grinding gear. Like everyone's counting on us to have a certain eye level so that we can get into the raid and we can kick ass. Like I'm a little concerned because we're not even level 60 yet. And because I take my, like we've talked about before, I take my time. I like to read all the quests and I do all the side quests and I do it all. But luckily this time Warcraft has made the questing storyline different so that like you don't have to do every single quest in the zone in order to feel like you've done the zone. You're like, oh, okay, I've done this story. I can come back to this and do like all the extra stuff. And there's clearly two like higher level stuff too within each zone. So I've liked the way they've changed it, but I am behind. I've got so much to do here at home, but I just got a little bit behind, but I will be ready for raid. Hopefully
you also told me something. We have to talk about this update about the server merge. Guys, if you missed last episode, we talked about ERP, which I didn't know was a thing in World of Warcraft, which is erotic role play. Yes, we got there. And then Michelle took an example of a server called Moonguard.
Yeah, yeah.
And then what happened, Michelle?
Well, okay, I forgot that this happened because I hadn't, the last couple expansions of Warcraft, it's no secret that I haven't been really happy about them. So I haven't like played to the extent that I normally have in those expansions. And I forgot that a couple of years ago, they started to do a server merge and my server, Thorium Brotherhood, which is a role-playing server, got merged with two other role-playing servers, even though people don't really like, not everybody role plays. It's just, I don't know. People call it a Care Bear server because it's not like some servers are like PvP and everybody like you're always PvP all the time. On my server, you have to flag if you want to be PvP. So that way you can go questing and not worry about an alliance like ganking you out of nowhere. So I like my questing experience to be that way. And after I hit level 60, then I flag myself. But I forgot that they took the role playing servers and they merged them. So my server actually got merged with Moonguard. And so I'm seeing now in the general chat the ERP that's going on. And there was, I forgot about it. And I'm standing at the bank, like doing a bunch of, you know, bank cleaning on my character. And I look in chat and there's this woman or somebody, it's like a warrior saying like, hey, I'm going to be in front of the war chief doing a dance. I'm going to be in a shell. Please leave tips. Like this whole, it was, she's like doing a strip. A strip thing. I don't know he. I don't know who it was, but it was a warrior on Moonguard. It said I was like, oh shit, a warrior on Moonguard. Here we go. Here we go. We can. Yeah. So it's happening.
And then
happening.
You took a screenshot and told us. And
oh yeah, I was like, hey, guess what? I forgot that my server merged with Thorium, or I forgot that my server merged with Moonguard. With Moonguard. Yeah.
So good now times. So now we get to see a little bit of ERP stories every week, guys.
Yeah, yeah. I'll try to go over to Goldshire, create an alliance over there. Oh, can you imagine though, like if you're just like starting a tune like you don't even know and then you're like there's hundreds of people like just in this one little area and you're like, "What is this?" That's what's going to be happening there.
That it's quite an experience in not necessarily a bad one. You might be like, oh, I didn't know I was into that. Right?
Well, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know if you remember, but a meme about 15 years ago, before memes were memes, was that Night Elf dancer, right? That little boys were kind of looking at when she was dancing some things.
There's each character, each race has its own special dance in Warcraft. And yeah, like some of them were just like very sexy for people watching.
Back then, maybe.
Now yeah, it's back like, then. Well, now they can have anything online. But at the time, it was like, whoa.
She's dancing like a pop star.
Yeah, I was looking at gaming news this week and I saw something kind of funny there that I wanted to tell you about. There was I read it in Complex, but there was a guy who bought a PlayStation 5 and he lied to his wife and told her that it was an air purifier. Okay. But she found out that it was an air purifier and then made him get rid of it. So she was like, wait a minute, hold on, this is not an air purifier.
I've always wondered if those are fake. You see that, like, the day of the release, there's this girlfriend who got mad and said, like, he's never going to talk shit about me again. And, like, threw his PlayStation 5 in the bathtub. And
what?
And you wonder if those are fake or not. Because, like, to do that on release day when nobody else can get it sounds like it's a... It has to be fake. You know, for me, it has to be fake. But it created a lot of views. So I wonder if that's something similar with your news.
Yeah, it could be. It could be. Like, it could just be, like, some fake stuff going on here. There's, who knows? The PlayStation and the Xbox are still impossible to find. Like the moment I tried to get one, there was a link that went up for Costco had them and immediately went there. I was like, thank God I didn't make my husband get rid of that membership that we never use. So he like, I almost did too. And I was like, oh, we could keep it for this year. I was like, yes, I'm going to get the PlayStation. And it was sold out in seconds, like seconds. I'm kind of glad that this like generation of consoles isn't too different from the previous generation. So I don't feel like I'm super missing out. But I do think like in a couple months, hopefully it will start calming down maybe after the holidays and then I'll be able to.
Anyway, you have no time. Enter. You're playing WoW.
I know that's the thing, right? I do want to play some Cyberpunk though. That's for yes. sure. Are you going to play too. Cyberpunk?
Yeah.
That's next week,
so
isn't it?
I'm so excited. I think so. I'm excited for starting the 18. I'm trying to like only game. Stay at home yes. game. So I want to play Immortals Fenyx, a new Ubisoft game that's kind of like Zelda. I started playing it the other day. I thought it was so fun.
It's like Zelda.
It's like a Zelda-like. It's very, very fun. It was made in Quebec City, my hometown. So I'm also like, hey, it's their first new IP that's been done here. So I'm excited about that. I want to finish Watch Dog. I want to finish Assassin's Creed. I know these are all like Ubisoft games, but it's just they released a bunch of games. I don't know.
They've got good games.
I want to play games. Cyberpunk. There's a lot of games I want to play. I'm so excited. That was 10 years ago.
In total truth, I have never finished an Assassin's Creed game ever.
Oh,
I've always played like I play them a little bit and then something happens and comes up and then I forget, you know. I'm actually, in truth, pretty bad at finishing games. Do you finish all the way every time?
No, but I'm a pretty big achievement hunter.
I'm an achievement hunter too.
So I try to do it at least to get that completion achievement. And if I have more time, I try to go 100.
Achievement? Wow, really? Jeez. Because usually, like nowadays, like you finish a game and it's only at like 30%. You're like, oh my God, I have so much left to do in the game, which is amazing. Yeah. A lot of times, the achievement hunting is what kind of takes my time from finishing the game because I'll find myself doing all the, like the little things.
Yeah. I get it. Maybe you should need to be better about it. On like the main mission now.
I do. I'm going to focus main mission. That's going to be like, I should like go in my backlog actually for the holidays. We're going to be taking a couple of weeks off for the game diaries just so we can have a holiday where we just game and stay home all day, you know, yes. Unlike we stay home all day anyway right now because it's COVID.
I know, but I'm excited. Different. I'm really excited. For the first time in years, I'm super looking forward for this holiday season just because I will do nothing in pajama for real. It's not like I gotta have to run to see family because we can't. So ready for it.
That's going to be really weird, like in a way, you know, not seeing any. I mean, it's just kind of like how it was for Thanksgiving too here, but not seeing any friends or family for, I mean, I'm so used to that every year, but this gives us a good excuse just to stay home,
you know,
and sleep,
eat.
Yeah. I'm going to eat so much. I'm going to be so fat when I come back. I can't wait.
Okay. Before we go to your submission, because we got a submission today for a diary entry. Yeah. It's my turn to read it. So I'm excited. Yes. But before we jump into this, I went on a set for the second time, I think, since COVID, but the first time in like complete lockdown last week. And it was so weird. First of all, it was the most annoying thing because I had my mask and then I had to redo my makeup like 3 times because the mask like kept putting away. And they were super intense, which I loved. So like you can't like this was my green room and I can't get out. And, you know, everything was super strict.
Good.
When I'm on set, I can't move. I was sitting and that's it, you know? So it was pretty good. But at the same time, it was really weird. Yeah.
That's a weird experience. Like, I'm so excited to get back to being on set. Like, I love sets, but.
And you have rules like, can you like remove your mask like, at least 20 minutes before? So I had to be on set.
Because you don't have lines.
So I was like on set just waiting for my lines to get out. And then she did my makeup right before. It was very, very interesting.
I have a picture of the two of us, actually, from when we very first met. Yes.
The Oculus.
We had the eye. We looked like we had, like, the whole eye mask still on because of the thing, like, imprinted into our face.
Oculus. Yes.
I have it. We're, like, looking at it. We have.
I remember.
We have those marks on our faces. It's crazy.
Okay.
Oh, I didn't even think about that. Wow.
Yeah, okay. It's fun. It's quite and you know, for the makeup artist, it's a mess because they have to, like, split every little thing for each other, and yeah, they write your name on the pencils because they can't mix it up.
Which I love. That's great because
yeah, I'm like, I hope they keep that. Like, I do even too. After.
I actually on sets, I bring my own mascara and my own anything that's mascara or like eyeliner and lipstick, any kind of lip gloss, I bring my own every single time just because I don't want any problem at all. So I've always done that. I just bring a little kit with me, just like an extra kit. And or sometimes I'll ask the makeup artist beforehand, like if it's a series or a show that I'm working on like constantly, I'll talk to them beforehand and they'll hold my stuff for me too, just to make sure that, you know, the kit stays together. It's a little pro tip so that you disease on your eye or something.
Guys, as you may or may not know, we take application for your game diaries entries. And this week we got one from Jamie Michelle. Oh. Jamie is a she or a they. And she is really excited I'm really excited to read her story. Okay, let's put it this way. Because okay. I think it's the first time I read it.
It is your first time, yeah.
I think so. I'm like, woohoo. Okay. It starts with, before she launches her game diaries, it starts with a little bit of an introduction. So she was like, I really don't like to brag about my own success, but I saw your podcast and thought, well, maybe I can tell a cool story. So yes. I'm sure your story is going to be awesome. Jamie, let's jump into it. Dear Game Diary. Yay. Back in...
yeah, I love right it.
Yeah. You're doing so good, Jamie.
Yeah, it's already started off right.
Okay. Back in 2017, I was taking a class on American literature, which she pushed in parentheses after AMLET, which I love it. So I guess American literature people say AMLET for that. So one of the first books we had to read was Walden by Henry Thoreau.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So partway through that lecture, partway through another lecture, our professor said something like, apparently there's a Walden video game now as well. I don't know how you would do that, but I bet it's awful. So, that's very interesting that a American literature person would say that. For me, I'm a little upset already. I'm like, wait a minute. You're teaching American literature. Like, how can you be talking?
And you would think you would hope smack. That, like, you would appreciate that there was another way to tell that story.
Yeah. Interesting. So I think that Jamie... it was feeling a little bit like that because she seemed to be a fan of video games. So now she wrote, now I like a good challenge and I love showing up people who dismiss video games. That sounds like us. Mm-hmm. So I told my AMLET prof I was going to write my final paper on the Walden game. I read as much criticism I could get my hands on about the book and applied it to the game. My final grade, A+.
Amazing.
Right? Okay. But that's just the start. Okay. My AMLET prof comes up to me after Christmas breaks and asks me to tool the paper into a shorter presentation so I can give it as a talk at a regional literature conference.
Oh.
So fast forward another few months and I sell an even shorter version of the paper as my first paid gig on a gaming website.
Oh my God. Right? That's amazing.
That is. Okay. But again, it's not over. Then a year goes by and I go back to that AMLET prof and I tell him I want to do a big independent project for the last semester of my undergrad. And I want you to be my supervisor. I want to read every book you can find in a specific quest line in the Walden game. Huh. Right? That's already like pushing it. And he says, okay, just don't overload yourself. So naturally, I do overload myself. There's 7 books in that quest, and they're all books like Omer's Liliad and Plato's Republic. So like difficult books. I don't know if you've read a little bit those books, but they are kind of on the heavy. Epic poetry and philosophy and spirituality. One of them, the Rig Veda, is so big, you might as well read only part of it in a 3-month course.
Yeah.
That's insane. But wow. I read all of it and the rest of them and all the other books you find outside of that quest in the game. And as part of that course, I was also reading books for another class. My supervisor was doing it as the classroom component. So there's a lot of moving pieces. All told, it was about 13 books just for one class. And none of these books was anything breezy, especially the classroom component books, because it was James Joyce's Ulysses. That whole project was the single hardest thing I've ever done. And I got another A for it.
Wow. That's amazing.
Bam. Yeah. So months later, my supervisor asked me to come give a lecture on the Walden game for his new MLIT class, which is like a full circle now. And one of my friends is in that class. And she told me that my supervisor gave the class this introduction about me. I've never seen anyone take on a master's thesis worth of work and do it in 3 months, much less an undergraduate student.
Oh, wow.
So somewhere in the middle of all this, I realized I was trans. And I only bring this up because it's an immense comfort to hear about figures like Rebecca Heinlein. And I want to thank you for spotlighting her on your show. Thank you so much, Jamie.
Oh, my God.
This song was so good, Jamie.
Oh, my God.
I'm crying. Whew.
Jamie, that's amazing. Rebecca Heinemann is one of the most inspirational people I think we have in gaming. And that's just really cool. That is really cool.
What a cool story. I love it. You know what, Jamie? I love it that you were able to take like a part of your life and say because of gaming. And I really, really enjoyed it. You did exactly what my vision was about gamer entries. You're amazing.
Unbelievable. I mean, it's also too, like, goes to show that, like, the professor at first, you know, was kind of doubting, you know, was doubting that gaming could communicate the American literature in that way. And the fact that she was able to take it on and prove him wrong in a way and prove that it can be is pretty amazing. Especially those are big books. Like all of those works are they're heavy, they're complicated. I'm curious about this game now.
Yeah, I honestly, Danny, our producer, and I had to kind of Google what it was because I frankly never heard of it. But it's a game that came out in 2017 and it's a first person open world and it looks like those kind of exploration games, serious games. Educational game. Walden, WALDEN, comma, a game.
Walden, a game.
Yeah, so go check it out, guys. It's actually, it has
Games for Change Festival gave them Game of the Year and Most Significant Impact.
Yeah, it actually has good reviews on Steam. It's 8 out of 10 on Steam.
Wow.
And 85% of people on Google users love the game, so...
You can get it on, it's coming soon to Xbox, and it's available for PlayStation 4. That's amazing. Jamie, thank you so much for sharing your story. That's awesome. And if anybody out there has a story that they want to share as well, we definitely want to hear about it. So make sure to submit on our website, thegamediaries.com, and you'll find a form on there that you can fill out and send us your story about gaming and how it changed your life.
And on that note, we're going to leave you with a little 30-second break and we'll be right back with this week's Game Diary entry from Michelle.
Yay!
Can't wait to hear about it.
All right, we'll be right back.
Michelle.
We're back.
It's your week.
It's my week.
It's my favorite week.
I know that feeling.
And I totally have no idea who you're going to talk about today. So,
oh my goodness.
It's going to be a huge surprise.
You know, I've got thinking about competitors in general because, you know, we talked about Cuddlecore a couple weeks ago and, you know, you're a competitor and I feel like I'm learning so much about being a competitor and what it takes to be victorious in it as well, especially I think for women, because when I was growing up, there was no path for this. Like it was like, there was like the Nintendo Championship Series, but like it was, what was that? Like 1993 or something, or no, before that, like 1990. And it was like pre-internet. It's not like we knew about this stuff. And young kids were competing in the Nintendo Championship, but it's not like we heard about it like you do online all the time, you know, like there was no, oh, hi, Samus. There was no Twitter, my cat standing up. There was no like social media to alert us to, you know, what was going on in the world. So we kind of like, you had to rely on magazines or like the local news or whatever. And it wasn't something that like as a young girl was ever something that could have been possible for me. Like it was just not, it just didn't exist. That's the point. And I always wonder, like, if that did exist, would I have gone that way? Because mm-hmm. I love team sports and I love games. And I'm wondering, like, would I have done that? Would I have gone that way? And I'm always fascinated by how young people start too. Like recently there was a story just this past week that an 8-year-old signed a deal with an esports organization for $33,000 signing bonus to play Fortnite. He's only 8 years old. Like that's amazing. But I wonder, like, I just wonder if I would have done it. How old were you when you started gaming or when you started competing?
I was 17. So for today's generation, it was kind of old. But for my generation, it was really young because you couldn't definitely really compete. Yeah. So I was in high school.
Yeah, so young. Mm-hmm. I wanted to talk about a teenage gamer that I became aware of a couple years ago. When I was working for Bleacher Report, there was like a crazy story that happened with her. And I find it fascinating. There was this teenage girl about 15 years old, and she got embroiled in this wild cheating scandal. It was false, but she got embroiled in this wild cheating scandal and ended up becoming a reluctant icon for women in gaming. It's not something she set out to do. She just wanted to play the game. To none of her wishes got, you know, put on this pedestal by everyone to be like a beacon for diversity. But she was so good at her game with her aim and her win ratio being so high that all the dudes just assumed that she was cheating. So this week I want to talk about that. I want to talk about the story, what happened to her. So I'm going to make a diary entry on Seyun Kim, also known as Gaguri. Have you ever heard of Gaguri?
Yeah, I met her once.
You did?
Yes. I was, I think it's 2 years ago. It was my first time collaborating with the IOC, the International Olympic Committee, and she was invited there in Switzerland. So we were on a little like intimate panel together.
Oh, wow.
But that's
did she
it.
Have a translator?
Yeah, she did. And she could speak a little bit, but someone was translating for her. And I honestly don't know how to follow her because like it's super hard because she doesn't use like the North American and Occidental internet. So it's kind of hard. So I'm excited to hear about her story. I don't know much.
She's super interesting. For those who don't know who Gaguri is, she's best known for being the first woman in the Overwatch League. She's got a legion of adoring fans who celebrate her with the symbol of a frog because Gaguri means frog in Korean. It's like a misspelling of it. Like she spelled it wrong. Like there's a letter missing, but I think that was on purpose,
obviously.
Oh, I didn't
know.
So Gaguri means frog and that's her gamer tag. So they all use like a little frog and stuff for her. It's really cute. I always wondered what that was. And I was like, oh, that's literally the name. She's just frog. But Guri,
why are they using a frog to talk about frog?
Yeah, I was like, what is this frog thing like happening? But I'd always see it in her branding or her from her fans or on Overwatch League. But she is not a fan of the spotlight. She hates it. Ooh. So I'm a little like nervous to do an episode, to do a diary entry on her, because she does. She is not a fan of like people giving her the spotlight. And she definitely doesn't like being a feminist icon. So I'll be very careful on the way that I present her. But she's an introvert. And I think that she knows, though, at this point, you know, as she's gotten older, that her story is one that has touched millions of people all over the world. And because of what happened to her on such a global scale, she's cautious and reserved. She's, you know, pretty sick of being asked the same questions all the time as a woman, like, which we completely understand and relate to. It's that thing where they're just like, so what's it like being the first woman on Overwatch League? And what's it like being a woman? And she, that's kind of, I think, maybe because of the nature of Overwatch and like kind of what happened, that's why she got asked all those questions, because it wasn't her fault. We'll get into it, but it was more like Blizzard Activision's fault. And then she ended up kind of taking on the stress of it.
Ooh, that's juicy. Can't wait to hear about it.
Yeah, it's a it's a wild one. But let's set the stage for understanding Guri. Okay, so first, she's South Korean. She's from South Korea, which is way ahead of the curve when it comes to esports. It's kind of known as, for people out there who might not know, it's known as like the birthplace of organized modern esports. Have you ever been to South Korea or competed there?
Nope. For like the longest, first of all, there wasn't much shooter in all of Asia, like Japan, Korea. There's barely any teams over there, and there's a little bit more with Chinese. But second, I don't know why I've never had that like desire to visit since until COVID. It looks like since COVID, I've read and learned more about like Japanese culture and Korean culture, and I think it might be very similar to what I feel that I would feel home. So
maybe one day. I was
myself like one day, but now that we're in COVID, I'm like, damn it, I should have gone, you know?
Get a CSGO tournament over there and have a, you know, get something going over there. But you're right. It is kind of like, it's not as much FPS as it was like strategy games and MOBAs, kind of more started with like StarCraft.
It's kind of interesting to see Overwatch kind of bloom there. Compared to the other shooters.
It really bloomed. So in South Korea, they've got this phenomenon, this like cultural phenomenon, which is kind of like an internet cafe called a PC bong. And the PC bong is like, it's an internet cafe that's dedicated to gamers. So like you go there, you spend money like by the hour, and you can play, and you play with other people around. And it got really popular in like 1999, like the end of like last century. Everybody was playing it. And the big game was StarCraft, specifically Brood War. And this was like the go-to after school hang. Like, I know like when I was a kid, like the go-to after school hang was like Taco Bell. So like it would be so much cooler to go to like a PC bomb.
Why Taco Bell?
I don't know. Everybody wanted like the nachos Bel Grande. I don't know. Everybody went to Taco Bell. Like everyone. It was the thing. You got like a giant Mountain Dew and like a burrito. And that was it. Like there was no, there wasn't like an internet cafe where I was. I mean, there probably was, but it just wasn't something everybody went and did. So this is like a cultural thing.
Yeah.
And everybody goes. And then I was reading more about the sort of the South Korean gaming obsession on this site called nationalinterest.org. And it was just this past June that they published it, actually. And while the South Korean gaming economy is just as big as the US or even China, it's just way ahead of the curve in accepting gaming as an industry, because it took us forever. So by the year 2000, just like a year after like the PC bong was like going crazy and was all the rage, the South Korean Culture Ministry created KESPA, which is the Korean Esports Association, that started handling big tournaments for StarCraft. And eventually they started doing it for Dota 2 and League of Legends. So they were like strategy, RTS games, and MOBAs. The article says that pro gaming exists in its current form and size in large part thanks to the people who made it possible in South Korea. Other countries took years to catch up and are to this day still trying to mimic some of the success that they had in South Korea. So it pumps out some amazing esports talent. Like a lot of, you'll notice that a lot of esports pros are South Korean, including probably their most popular and famous gamer, Faker. Some of you guys that are League of Legends fans have probably heard of him, but he's a big League of Legends star and he makes a salary between like $4 and $5 million a year. So he's
we might talk about him one day, you know? He might be more into gaming.
We're probably going to be covering Faker at some point here. We're going to be making a diary entry on him. But for all of its advancement in the gaming industry, Korea is still a pretty sexist place. And according to this ESPN article on Gagari called Game Interrupted, which is a great article and also great name. It's like Girl Interrupted.
Yeah. Yeah.
Women are pretty far behind in comparison to men. It says female workers earn on average 37% less than their male counterparts.
Wait, in Korea?
South Korea.
Wow. Yep.
37% less. And an income gap that ranks, it is an income gap that ranks 35th out of 35 countries in an Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development.
Yeah,
so it is really like the worst. And while more women than men go to college in Korea, they only hold 2% of management positions in like the biggest companies in the country. And they continue to also bear the brunt of all the housework. So in recent years, it's really bad over there. And in recent years, there's been a lot of uprising. Though for women, there's been a lot of women's groups, and we'll talk a little bit more about that later because it kind of comes into play. So that ESPN article, it also details that it's also taboo for women and men that are unmarried to live together, which makes it hard for female gamers to be moving into a team house, mostly because like it's predominantly already, you know, men. So like for a woman to then enter the scene, it's more about a woman entering the scene than it is a man entering a woman's scene. So it's harder for a woman to like move in with everybody. I think that's still kind of a weird thing here too. Like it's probably getting a little better. It seems like, have you ever lived in a team house?
Yes. And we did not have a guy in the house. Our manager was the women in, you know, with some of the drama that's happening in other content creating houses at the moment, for those who are following, for example, what happened with the offline TV house, what having guys and girls in the same house, I can see why it's complicated even here. Mm. You know, we're animals, okay?
Yeah.
Like the tension.
I mean, it's no different than college, right? Like you go to college and it's like dorm rooms and, you know, the Greek system and whatever. And it's like the same kind of, I'm sure the same kind of social dynamics that everybody's like growing up and learning who they are and being attracted to each other and having to deal with a bunch of different issues. So we've got this compounding issue, right? We've got a country that's way ahead of the curve in terms of esports, but behind the curve with equality. And the societal taboos that put women in the disadvantaged position because the scene is dominated by men. So it's like this issue, it's just a compounding issue. But despite all of this, a very young Gagari started gaming at the age of 5. And it's fairly well documented that her parents introduced her to a free online. They introduced her to as a free online Korean multiplayer called Crazy Arcade. And I looked it up and it looks like this cute little water balloon game where you trap opponents in bubbles by throwing water balloons at them and you trap them in a little bubble. And she played this game a lot with her mom specifically. So very young, she's playing just like, you know, a lot of us, you know, early gaming. And in a different article for ESPN, ESPN's actually covered her multiple times. This one is titled, "I Want to Keep Trying Harder." That's the kind of person she is. Gagari says of her parents, they really didn't like me playing too many video games like most parents, but they saw that I was really passionate about it. So at around 15 years old, Gagari saw the trailer for Overwatch. So she's been playing since she was 5, but at about 15, she sees the launch trailer for Overwatch. And that released in 2014 at BlizzCon. And I know because I was a part of that announcement. It was it was my first BlizzCon. And every year, about a month before the show, I would go to Blizzard headquarters for what they called BlizzCon boot camp. And each team would come and meet with us, and they would break down every single announcement, every single, you know, interview that I was going to be conducting. So I would learn everything ahead of time. And I was under like major NDA. Like you walk into Blizzard and you like sign away your first child. it's a big, like it's scary. So the head of PR took me and my co-host at the time, who was Jeff Keighley. The two of us went into his office. And there was a couple other like Blizzard higher ups in there, and they like drew the blinds and they're like, don't say a word about what you're about to see. And then they rolled out the poster for Overwatch, which is that poster behind me. And they rolled it out and they just said, this is our new game. And we just looked at it and we're like,
so dramatic.
It really was. And, you know, I was with Jeff Keighley, who's one of like the premier video game journalists that exists, you know, that's like what he's known for. He was looking at it like, whoa. And both of us just sitting there knowing what a big deal this was going to be. Because I think at the time, Blizzard hadn't had a new IP for something like 17 years. So it was a big fucking deal. Like people were going to freak out. And, you know, so we knew that a bunch of people even at Blizzard didn't even know about his existence. And they're like, you know, you have an NDA, so don't say a word, you know? And it, honestly, like when we watched the launch trailer, they showed us the launch trailer and it looked like a movie. Like it looked like something that Pixar would have put out or something. It was beautiful. Like you weren't even sure at first it was a game because it was just so polished and put together and different than anything Blizzard had ever done before. And for those of you listening that don't know Overwatch or haven't played Overwatch, you may have heard of it because it's been sort of more in the mainstream news. It's a team-based 6v6 first-person shooter. So six people on each team, FPS, but it's cute. Blizzard likes to call it a hero shooter. Like that was the word, like those were the words that we were supposed to use, like hero shooter. And when you enter a game, you choose from a list about like 30 characters. There's less on that poster. They've added characters since. But there's over 30 characters. They call them heroes. And each one has different powers. And a lot of people will often associate FPS, like first-person shooter games, with like wartime, grizzled guys, Call of Duty, Counter-Strike, a little bit more like serious war kind of stuff. But this game was really bright and really friendly, and the characters look like cartoons. It's set in this like futuristic sci-fi world where humans and robots live happily together. So like the game has a lot of women, a lot of robots, a lot of diversity. It's kind of hailed for how diverse all of the characters are. And in the game, it happens like in like 60 years from now, more or about. It happens in like 2060, so like 40 years from now. And it takes place where the humans and the robots are getting along, but suddenly the robots go bad, like a certain group of them, and they call it the Omnic Crisis. The robots are called Omnics, and they attack the people. So in the game, the United Nations puts together this international task force. So each one of the characters is from a different country around the world. And they're fighting this crazy, you know, situation where robots are attacking humans. And the UN calls them the Overwatch. A lot of this story, though, is not told in the game. You will not find a whole lot of story in this game. The game is a competitive game. They are coming out with a game that's a story mode game. But for now, in the main version of Overwatch, a lot of the content that you're going to see about it, you're going to learn the story through like cinematics and comic books and, you know, even like fan stuff. Because honestly, a lot of the fans have put their own spin on the characters, which has in turn inspired the creators, the game, you know, the game developers to put those things into the game. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of LGBTQ, a lot of disabilities being highlighted. Like one of the characters, Symmetra, is autistic. There's a lot.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Tracer, the main character, who's on the box cover, is a lesbian. They've done a really good job making sure this game was diverse, yeah. that it could speak to a lot of different people. And everyone loved this game, like, right away. Like, people were like, whoa, hold on, because they could see themselves in it. It was friendly, and it made them look like they could wanted to play it. Kind of, if any of you out there played, like, Team Fortress, had that kind of a feel to it. So anyway, that's Overwatch. And in BlizzCon 2014, gamers around the world saw this trailer release in unison, including the 15-year-old Gaguri, who just says she became mesmerized by it. In that ESPN interview, she said, "When I pictured a first-person shooter, there was always so much blood. But Overwatch was bright and animated, and I fell in love with it before I even played it." And apparently, she had to borrow a classmate's password to play the beta version of the game. Aww. And she spent hours practicing at those PC bongs that I mentioned earlier. I fell in love with Overwatch, like, immediately as well. I was like, this is definitely a game that makes me feel like I can play it. Did you play it a lot?
Yeah, I played the beta like crazy. And then I played the first couple months insane. Like, I used to play after practice. So after, like, my Counter-Strike practice, I would relax in Overwatch. So I would try to play the characters that are, like, relaxing for me. So, like, Lucio, Mercy, you know, the characters that were, like, around doing their own things. And it was relaxing for me. I didn't want to do, like, anything, like, shooting or
you just super intense. Chill after yourself. It's so funny to think. It's so funny. My husband will laugh at you saying, like, Overwatch is relaxing. Like,
well, if I played the other characters, I would not be relaxed. And that's why I never played any other characters. I was definitely the stereotypical, like, woman playing, like,
the healers,
support and healers on Overwatch. Because I didn't want to worry about anything else. But I did really like it. I think that when it came out, it definitely had an edge that was never seen before. I don't want to talk about Overwatch in 2020, but when it came out, Overwatch was definitely quite hype. Quite hype.
It was super hype, and everybody kind of wanted to be involved. It was something I saw with the esports scene, where, like, people from all different esports, like, wanted to be involved. And a lot of, like, people wanted to be casters or announcers or hosts. Like, so many people wanted to be involved with it because it was a new thing. It was Activision Blizzard. They knew a lot of money was going to be going into it. And that's kind of what the esports scene had been lacking for a long time, was money. And suddenly, you know, Overwatch is putting this giant game out, and clearly there's going to be a huge esports scene around it. So Gaguri loved playing it. She admits to ESPN that she spent all of her allowance money practicing at the PC banks. And in that time, she got, like, crazy good at playing the character Zarya. And Zarya is this Russian bodybuilder chick with, like, bright pink spiky hair. And in a Korean interview with this place called SportsCon, Gaguri revealed that she chose Zarya because she liked the way the character looked, and because how Zarya matched up against the ultimates of other characters, which she said was best for her playstyle in helping her teammates out of sticky situations. Zarya is a tank that uses shields, and so she can bubble other players and, like, absorb the damage, or you can bubble yourself. And her ultimate is this big grav ability where, like, she can make all of the enemy team stick in one spot, so then you can, like, fire them down really quick. She's not the most complicated character, but you need a lot of precision to play her really well, which I don't have at all. You need a lot of team, like, awareness. But anyway, in that ESPN feature, Game Interrupted, she talks about how male gamers just didn't want to team up with her when they heard her speak and considered using a computer program to modulate her voice, because she wanted to play, but she was dealing with dudes being like, oh, you're a girl, and then harassing her and shit. So she just didn't want to deal with that. So she was trying to, but she didn't know how to use computers very well. Like, in general, she knew how to, like, log in and go to the PC bang and, you know, or PC bong and like go in and log in. But she didn't know how to do it herself. Her family's computer was really sluggish and just not something she knew. But she kind of was like, well, maybe I should modulate my voice. But during this time, she ends up meeting another woman who played by the name of Akaros. She was a 21-year-old college student who was playing a high-level game of Heroes of the Storm, so another Blizzard game. She also played World of Warcraft, was a raider as well. And at first, Kaguri didn't know that she was talking to another girl. They were just becoming friends and gamers and competitors and, you know, had nothing to do with gender. But after chatting online, they realized that they had something in common. And Kaguri notes, before we met, I never used voice chat because everyone just teased me. But after meeting her, I was able to communicate with others playing the game. Essential.
That is really, really, really cute.
Not being able to communicate while you're playing a team-based shooter would be hell. Like,
yes.
You know,
especially then, there was not as many tools as in 2020 to speak to shooters.
Yeah, in 2014, like 6 years ago. Yeah. And if you can't communicate with your teammates, like you really can't effectively play at a high level. And I'd probably say, though, that Overwatch, out of all the games I have ever played, it's sad to say, but that's probably the game that I've received the most toxicity from.
Yeah.
It's the very game intense. That, like, it's hard because, like, the moment you start speaking, you know, guys will be like, some will immediately come at you, which I would just combat back to them, or turn off voice chat. Or they're cool until you start losing and then they're like, oh, it's your fault. You're a girl. Like, you're like, no. But anyway, so I feel that. Like, I feel that a lot for her. So thank God for this girl, Akaros. And I don't know if it's Akaros or Akros, but she spells it A-K-A-R-O-S. So now Kaguri is in the game. She's getting better. She's communicating with other players. And soon Akaros invites her to be on her amateur Overwatch team, which was called UW Artisan, UW Artisan. I went to the University of Washington. So if I end up saying UW because it says UW, that's why. So it was UW Artisan and everything was going totally fine. So she's on this amateur team. She's playing. She's like, oh, this is cool. And everything's really going great until Kaguri is just way too good. She didn't know how good she was. So June of 2016, she's now 17 years old. She's been playing for like a year and a half. Kaguri's team, UW Artisan, faces off against another Korean team known as Dizziness. Now, what happens next has been covered globally by media because of how entirely absurd this entire situation was. I remember I was working for Bleacher Report at the time and hearing the story and just being like, what? Out of all of the articles online, though, the most detailed information comes from a Reddit user by the name of Kalise. In a post that breaks down what was kind of dubbed the hackusation, Kaguri had an obscenely high KDA, kill-death ratio, and a win rate of 80% with 420 games played, which is really, really high. It notes that it was the highest known of KDA win rates. Because she was dominating, though, it caught people's attention. And some of the players started to accuse her of hacking. They thought she was using an aimbot to assist her. Winning the qualifiers for this particular tournament, which was called the Nexus Cup, she defeated many of the top Korean teams. And the opposing players just freaked out. They could not handle it. They accused her of cheating. They said that she must be using the aimbot because there's no way that she could be that good. They pointed out that her aim, so like in all the posts, they're like, no, her aim is sticking too precisely on enemies for that to be human. There's no way she's that good. This is not possible. And at first, Kaguri was like, oh, this is flattering. Like, this is like, I'm that good that they think I'm cheating. Haha. Like, so at first she's like, this is really cool. But then it like goes real south. A Kotaku article called Korean Woman Kicks Ass at Overwatch Gets Accused of Cheating. It says that it printed out what the accusers said. One of the Dizziness players named Strobe is he was the worst one. He was quoted saying, if this problem is confirmed as a hack, it would have caused a problem to our career and reputation. How will you take responsibility for that? If there's a problem with our sponsors and such, I may visit Gaguri's house with a knife in hand, and I am not joking.
Wow. That was a pro player, or that was like an amateur player? Wow.
Well, they were on this, an amateur team. Like Overwatch League had not started yet. This was before Overwatch League. Overwatch League started in 2018. Yeah. So it hadn't started quite yet. So this was like people were getting leagues going. People were getting Overwatch going. And in Korea at the time, this is where a lot of the people were playing Overwatch. Like that's where a lot of the action was. So everybody was like, oh crap, like these are death threats. And this other player on this other team is saying, I'm going to come to your house with a knife. Like, can you imagine? Like, I understand like people on the internet say crappy things and say toxic things and give death threats, right? But like, can you imagine it being like a player on the opposite team? Have you ever dealt with that?
Death threats from a player on the opponent teams? I'm trying to think. I mean, I heard like stuff like, I'll fuck you up. These kind of things. Not like that. Not like a public message from an opponent.
These were all very public. It was all on the site, like Invin.
I don't think so. That feels very scary. Incredible. Yeah.
Yeah. There was another player on the team called Elta that joined in on the accusations, didn't give a death threat, but demanded that Blizzard Korea investigate her. This is how mad they were for losing. They're like, they cannot handle the fact that she's beating them. They're narcissists. Yeah. So Gaguri's team starts getting calls from Blizzard Korea, who is now also questioning if she's cheating, which is heartbreaking. Because if you're really spending all your time and love and energy doing this and now suddenly the developer doesn't think you're telling the truth either, terrible. So the team manager of Gaguri's team, she goes by the name of Lime, she recorded the conversations with Blizzard. And she posted them all online.
Oh, what a smart little cookie.
Yeah. Cool. She's a good manager. She posted them to the Korean website Invin for everyone to see as proof. And in her post, she says, and this is translated, we really got all sorts of blame for 3 days. Various sexual harassment, swear words. It was like hell. All team members took it hard, and Gaguri and another player by the name of Chinu cried. So it was hell for this team. Like here they were succeeding and now suddenly they're getting terrible death threats by everyone because the member of the opposite team did. Something that ESPN notes in their feature is that all of the lurid attacks were perfectly calibrated to capture fans' attention, and to provoke debate about the glaring void of women in esports. So while female gamers don't have the same physical disadvantages against males as like a female basketball player, in Seoul, where corporate-sponsored teams live in gaming houses and play in front of packed arenas, the top players were all men. So even though none of the guys said, oh, you're a girl, like none of them said that. And Gaguri likes to point that out. They're like, nobody's explicitly said, this is because you're a woman. Like nobody said that. But at the same time, there is this like sort of inherent sexism where it's like, did they have to say it? Because they're putting her through so much hell. Would they have done this to a guy? I mean, it definitely makes you ask the question, you know? And remember, she's just a teenager. Like she just turned 17. And, you know, there is in no way was she ready for this kind of harassment or even like major societal conversation about females in games when all she's trying to do is play. And so now she's getting all this scrutiny on a global scale. So the team manager Lime goes on in her post to say that the Disney-ness players promised that they would apologize to Gaguri in person only if she could prove that she didn't cheat. And if she was legit and they were wrong, these players on the Disney-ness team promised that they would quit Overwatch forever and retire from esports. Little dramatic.
People that do these kind of things are so pitiful to me. I don't like.
Oh, my God.
Okay.
Like, just, it's like next level. It's like, oh, okay, and if you're not cheating, I'll quit? What? But Gurguri was not going down without a fight. Blizzard Korea looked into the allegations for the hacking aimbot, and they cleared her of any wrongdoing.
They're yeah.
Like, she's not doing it. She's not cheating. We had to look into it. She's not cheating. However, the damage was done. It was widespread. And to quell any like conspiracy and to prove everyone that she was top tier, she decided to get on stage and live stream her gameplay. Because she was getting literal death threats saying, you know, that if she sucked, they would kill her. She wore a mask, like a white Zorro mask, like a little white eye mask to conceal her identity while a host for InVin introduced her on the stream. I don't know if you saw any images of it, but
no,
she's literally wearing like a Zorro mask. Actually
the first time I hear of that. Wow. Okay.
And,
so fucked up. The whole thing is so fucked up.
It's so fucked up. It's so fucked up. And she needed to conceal her identity. And according to ESPN, she had to tape the introduction with the host several times because she was so anxious. The host was, his name is Kim Young Il. He's like an esports guy. So he was trying to interview her. And after he introduced her, Gurguri apologized for the accusations and said that she didn't even know how to cheat. And she was like sitting there, like she's kind of slumped over. You look at the images of it. She's got this, like the mask on, she's slumped over. The microphone is kind of like limp in her hand and she's quivering. It's hard to watch. She's so visibly upset and nervous. And the host was having a really hard time like getting her to open up because she was so visibly upset and nervous. And the host, you know, helping her along because she is shy on top of it and introverted on top of it. So this was just like the next level. And he kind of like laughed awkwardly and said, well, we can all watch her play and you can judge whether she used the assist hacks or not. Like, that's crazy pressure. So you can feel the pressure just watching it. And when she played, the camera, so she gets in front of the computer, she takes the mask off so you can't see her face, but the camera is like behind her to the right, so that you can see her mouse hand and the screen. And it's like that for an hour. And it's just on her mouse hand. So that you can see how precise she is. Thousands of people watched it after playing multiple games in a row for over an hour with the Twitch audience going crazy. I tried to watch some of it the other night again, but it's all in Korean. So I can't understand what they're all saying. Every now and then you could see English come up. So... but, you know, people were blown away by how good she was. The commentators were saying on the stream, she did a brilliant job, obviously. She was good at her aim, but there's also the timing of her skills. She plays very smart. So those were the things that were being said about her as she was playing. And afterwards, the host has her back on camera. She puts the mask back on. She gets on camera, and she is... like overcome with emotion. She starts crying. Tears are running down her face behind the mask. It's heartbreaking to see anybody in that position. It makes me emotional just thinking about it. So she's like,
honestly, I can't believe this. It feels like if this was a movie, I'd be like
screaming.
That would never happen. What the fuck? It's real life.
It's real life.
It actually happened. It's so messed up.
It is messed up. And, you know, she's hunched over and she literally cannot speak. The microphone is like this in her hand. And she's like this. And she's trying so hard to just come up with words. She ends up saying that she's under a lot of stress over the last few days because of the accusations. Shit. And she ends up saying, I know I could have played better. Like, she's still apologizing for other people thinking that she's not good. She's like, I was so nervous. I didn't play well. So there's that. And she did play well. People like were acknowledging like Blizzard cleared you. You didn't cheat. And yes, we can see how good you are. But she wasn't really able to like feel like super good and celebrate it. It was just sort of like she did this to like prove it to make it stop.
She's getting set up for failure in a way, right?
100%. And little did she know, though, how many people were paying attention to the situation.
Okay, that's better.
Suddenly, she finds a legion of supporters. She tweeted afterwards on her account at Gaguri, too, that she didn't expect this much attention from the world. She went on to say that she doesn't know much about computers, especially streaming, so that she was going to start streaming. And now she's been streaming for about 4 years. So she knows what she's doing. She has a constant stream. You guys can check her out. She's awesome. And as promised, the most vocal Dizziness players posted apologies. They didn't do it in person, it doesn't look like. They may have, and I just don't know about it, but they posted apologies online. And team member Elta posted, "I feel responsible for the situation. Since then, I personally apologize to Gaguri-sama and the people involved. I will withdraw from Team Dizziness and retire from the Overwatch scene. I am even sorry for using the word retirement with my insignificant skill and personality. I am very sorry." Another one wrote, Fitzcore, a very long apology, and at the end ended it with, "I promise to take responsibility for everything and give up cleanly my professional career." This is translated, obviously. "And as a personal wish, I would like my apology to come and go whenever this incident is spoken of." The team manager of Dizziness spoke up and said, he goes by the name of Raccoon. He said that it was the first time that he was a team manager and he should have handled things differently. And Strobe, the guy that made the death threats, also made an apology. It's no longer online, but pretty much all of his teammates threw him under the bus in their apologies, and they took no blame for his violent comments. It's not like they ever stopped him from saying it when he was saying, like, "I'm going to come to your house with a knife." They weren't like, "Yo, that's too far." They let him say it, you know. So they're throwing him under the bus, though, in these apologies. And according to Kotaku, he admitted to making the knife remark, and he said he was incredibly sorry that he couldn't control his anger and very much feels responsible, and ends with how he was going to quit Overwatch forever. So here's the thing, and Gaguri has said this many times, none of them made the scandal about her being a woman, but that's kind of like where the inherent underlying issue is. Like, would she have faced the same level of harassment or threat if she were a man? And I get what she's saying, like, and she has spoken about this many times, and she says, like, "Look, this wasn't about me being a woman. They just like saw that I was that good." And maybe it could have happened to a guy too. Totally. Maybe it could have. But it does make everybody wonder. And I think she understands that, like, why everybody asks that question. It's just not something that she is personally comfortable with claiming or even really accepting. And it's something that she's refuted quite a bit. So on January 21st of 2017, the Women's March took place all over the world. There were here in America, and there were sister marches everywhere. And in Seoul, Korea, there were about 2,000 people participating. And I remember seeing this online, and I was just shocked. They were carrying flags of D.Va, one of the characters from Overwatch.
No way!
D.Va has on her flag, they had a little flag that they were carrying, and D.Va has this little symbol of a bunny, and you know, it's if you play Overwatch, you know the symbol of D.Va. And D.Va is this really cute, I almost wore a D.Va shirt today. D.Va is this really cute character in the game. Her story is that she's a Korean professional StarCraft player and an actress, but now she's a mech pilot that is fighting with the Overwatch and is a tank, and she fights inside of this big pink mech, this big robot that she's inside of. And she's super cute. She never backs down from fights, and she's got this tagline that says, "I play to win." So she's like a symbol for female gamers in Korea, because that's, especially with StarCraft, being a pro StarCraft player is not something that, you know, any of them would have thought was possible, and it was such a male-dominated scene. So they loved this backstory of D.Va. This Korean group, what I learned, they're called the National D.Va Association. And in an article for Polygon, it turns out that the National D.Va Association is a group of huge Overwatch fans with a feminist bent, seeking to galvanize female-identifying and genderqueer gamers who could use some self-empowerment. And at the time when they created the group, South Korea just saw the resignation of their first female president, who was at the time was deeply embroiled in corruption.
Oh, no.
And yeah, and would use her gender as an excuse to shield her from the law and like dodge criticism. So she's like, oh, because I'm a woman, or lawyers would throw out because I'm a woman. And women's groups were having none of it. They were like, nope, no. So one of the members of the group who goes by the name of Nine commented to Kotaku, in a sexist country like ours, it would be impossible for a person like Diva to appear, especially after the case of Gaguri. If even Gaguri, who is a grandmaster rank, gets sexually harassed, I can't imagine how hard it is for lower tiers. She was accused of using hacks just because it was impossible for women to play games that well, which was, of course, false. So we decided to act for feminism under her emblem so that in 2060, when the Overwatch storyline begins in the game, someone like Diva could actually appear in real life.
Ooh.
I know. So very cool. But they did invoke the name of Gaguri. And they did say, you know, that the guys accused her of using hacks because it was impossible for a woman. And Gaguri is like, oh, wait a minute. They never said it was because I was a woman. And so she, you know, wasn't really comfortable with the National Diva Association, as cool as it is, inciting her name. So she sent a polite tweet later that year saying, because they kept doing it and they had marketing materials that were hailing and, I mean, idolizing Gaguri. So she sent a polite tweet out that said, look, it's a pain for me, but it is even more painful for me to be mentioned as inaccurate content that is different from the facts. Please, I would like any organization to stop commenting on something different from the facts. And so in return, the National Diva Association dropped her name from all of their marketing and social media posts out of respect for her. And, you know, it's hard to deal with this stuff, you know, regardless of your age or your position in life, much less being a teenager in a spotlight that you don't want to be in. And at the same time, though, it's pretty amazing to know that you inspired a whole group of women looking to you to be a leader, you know, like
I have so
complicated
many
situation.
I have so many thoughts. I'm a little bit conflicted about the story right now. I didn't know any of this. I think that, unfortunately, sometimes you can't help how your representation and how the impact that you can have.
Yeah.
And in a way, I'm kind of disappointed. Not disappointed, wrong words. In a way, I'm kind of, I need to be okay with the fact that some people don't want to be holding the flag.
Yeah.
Not to do a bad pun here with the fact that they also had flags.
Yeah.
But like it's okay for not everyone to feel like it's their purpose. Yeah. But at the same time, to think that the Gaguri story is not because she was a woman, I think is also being a little naive about the situation.
Yeah. And that might be though too due to her age, you know, like just lack of experience in that era. And also the pressures that come along with esports. You know, there's a big conversation about merit, you know, in esports, and a lot of like who I call the esports Illuminati, like the higher up guys that have been in esports forever. A lot of them really push the merit conversation. And I think that that can often, I know in broadcast at least, I know that that often really freaks women out, like in a way where they're like, they don't want to identify with, well, I'm a woman because, you know, the guys that they need the respect from believe in merit, but it's not that, it's just a weird kind of area, right? But after the Women's March, the Overwatch League announced, it came out with its lineup of players the following year. And you know, the Overwatch League was a very, very expensive sports league. Like franchises were bought for like $20 million and up to $40 million at this point. And here's what's tough. As a, for a game known for its diversity and female player base, because it attracted a lot of women, they recruited exactly zero female players. None. I was personally really angry about it because I work with Blizzard a lot, and I felt really let down by the fact that they didn't recruit any women. You know, the game was announced in 2014, and it didn't start a league until 4 years later. They had time.
Which is mind-blowing. Side.
Insane.
Which is mind-blowing. 4 years before you launch your league.
Four years.
Go back.
Or like 3.5. But like, they didn't look into female players. And the thing is like, they straight up knew about Gaguri. She made national headlines for their game. And they investigated her. And they knew she was like one of the best players. They knew this. So not only did they recruit zero female pro players, but the broadcast on-air talent team was comprised of 10 straight white men, one Puerto Rican man, and one woman, Zoe, who we love, but she was already a Blizzard employee. I've worked for Blizzard for years, and I didn't get a call to be a part of that. I didn't have time, and absolutely no way that it was something that I could have done, but it just goes to stand that no one asked me, and a lot of girlfriends of mine who were in Blizzard stuff, they didn't get phone calls either. Like nobody did. It was all white men. And it went wild online. The week Overwatch like media day came out and it was announced that like no women were on the team, and they looked at the broadcast talent and there was one woman on the broadcast. People freaked out. Like I was tagged in so many posts. It was a pretty wild week. But after a lot of online backlash, the league ended up adding two more men to the broadcast, two men of color, Golden Boy and Malik Forte, but no women at that time, at least. They did get to it, just not yet. But to go back to the league's media day. So the media day is in Los Angeles, and there's no women, no Gaguri, and it was shocking. And thankfully, the press, because they were aware of what happened, asked questions. And it sent the teams into a tailspin trying to discuss the logistics and impact of adding a woman to the team. And it was a pretty crazy sexist display that left me so disappointed. It's detailed in several articles, but I did watch it happen live. But Kotaku titled "No Overwatch Team Signed the Game's Most Notable Female Pro to Their Roster." The Houston Outlaws spent like a good chunk of the 20 minutes that they had for their media day discussing why Gaguri just wasn't a good fit for them because of the language barrier and concerns over co-ed player housing, with the manager, Matt Rodriguez, saying, you have to go through all these hurdles. Like, if you pick up a player, is the press going to call it a PR stunt, or is it just because she was the best? Like, what? What is that? Like, that shouldn't even be a part of it. And one of the players named Jake said, for that even to be the perception, it would be so terrible for her. People would always be doubting, always be judging her. So it has to be the right person, the right player, and those things have to come together at the right moment, which makes it especially hard for women in the scene right now. Okay, but like, so you're just guessing that it's going to be hard, so therefore it's not right? And then the manager ended up adding, Gaguri just needs to keep on grinding despite the additional obstacles in her path. Like, yeah, there's so many excuses about like when women can be a part of it. And the Kotaku article actually kind of summed it up best about this circular reasoning that was driving me insane. It says, you know, the Overwatch teams basically said, now isn't the time to give women players a shot, but someday they'll totally be a part of the Overwatch League somehow. In the meantime, women will just have to work harder than everyone else and also enter when the circumstances are exactly right. And the NYXL team, they're pretty much all Korean. I think like actually 40% of the league at that point were Korean.
Yeah.
But they too had their reasons. They're like, well, when we were constructing the roster, we wanted to like get a team out of the box, like team that have already played together, which I understand that part. Like, that's fine. But the London Spitfire, they also had an all-Korean roster, and they just said they never considered her because they wanted a team that had already played together. However, they did end up mashing together a bunch of different guys together in the end. And to make matters even more annoying, the Overwatch League did sign one of the guys from that Korean team, Dizziness, who was kind of a lesser harasser of hers, like when this all went down. But he did call for her to prove her stuff that she wasn't cheating. And he did apologize. And he wasn't one of the guys who were like death threats. And Gaguri has even graciously defended him, and they became friends. And she said that the two of them had never had a bad relationship. But why they didn't recruit her, and they did recruit someone on that team, it's beyond me. I'll never understand it.
Yeah.
Esports reporter slasher Rod Breslau spoke to Gaguri during this time, who said that Gaguri did not believe that getting signed into an OWL team was about her being a woman, and further that the controversy itself made her extremely uncomfortable. She just got out of this like cheating scandal, and now all of a sudden it's all about like, why didn't you sign her? Why aren't you signing a woman? And then it's about a woman. And I can only imagine how she felt. It's like this online crazy feeding frenzy shit show about sexism, where a teenager, she's still like 19 at this time, and everyone's using her as a beacon for diversity when all she wants to do is play Overwatch. So a couple weeks after the debacle, one of the teams, the Shanghai Dragons, signed her 3 weeks after this whole thing goes down. It's really interesting. It was a joyous celebration. Everyone's like, oh my God, 3 weeks after we all freaked out, the Shanghai Dragons added her on the team. But to note, the Dragons had already lost their first 10 games in a row. Yeah, they were 0-10 before picking her up. So, and they didn't really do much better for the rest of the season either. They actually went up for a 42-game losing streak. But she played well. And she was in a shitty situation because if the Dragons won, she's going to be praised. And if they lost, she'd be the reason. And yeah. Vice wrote this really great article about Gaguri called Esports and the Glass Cliff. Which is a great term and really interesting psychological research paper that I kind of dove into last night. And it details this phenomenon where women tend to be put in positions of power and notoriety only after an institution runs into a significant issue or significant trouble. And that tends then to hold that woman responsible for the players that she, for the problems that she inherited. Said you could argue the system worked because through merit, it promoted Gaguri and it demoted the players that she replaced. But that absolves the system of how it went about evaluating merit before she joined the team. Prior to joining just 3 weeks earlier, she was turned down by all the Overwatch teams for reasons that had nothing to do with her skill. The team straight out said that it was because of co-ed living, or because it was a language barrier, or because they already had a fully formed team. Nothing was about her lack of skill. And it goes on to talk about meritocracy is actually a toxic concept, with its origins originally based in satire, because it locks in biases by dismissing any questions about how we define and evaluate merit in the first place. So instead of the woman breaking through a glass ceiling, she's left out on a glass cliff, feeling vulnerable and precarious with this idea of merit that she's now got to live up to, even though her merit will be judged far different than any of her male counterparts that do this exact same position. I really like this research paper. I really like that term. I'd never heard it before. It's interesting because it's fascinating, right? At the end of the day, Gaguri didn't see much stage time at all when she played in the Shanghai Dragons, like barely ever saw any stage time. And that glass cliff that she was on was very evident. She barely played. She sat the bench for the majority of her time in the Dragons. I've read through countless Reddit threads, too, and fans of Overwatch League. And many believe that her skill actually outperformed one of her teammates, Envy. And others called her just the team mascot, there to sell jerseys. The coach said that he benched her because she's an off tank and they had an aggressive play style and it wasn't the meta. It's a lot of excuses. And as of October 26th of this year, Shanghai Dragons actually officially released her from the team. But apparently she's still going to play. And hopefully one of the other Overwatch teams will pick her up for the 2021 season and utilize her. A Dot Esports article by Nicole Carpenter, who I really like as a writer, sums it up best. She says, Gaguri has been hesitant to accept the title of Overwatch League's first woman, which is understandable. She's a competitor and she just wants to play the game. But for women in esports and gaming as a whole, her inclusion in the league is important. And Nate Nanzer, who was the commissioner of Overwatch League in the beginning, he's not anymore, but he was, he said, you know, she's already inspired millions of girls around the world. And hopefully diversity grows from here. It's not going to happen overnight. In 2019, Gregory was named Time Magazine's Next Generation of Leaders alongside people like Greta Thunberg. And Time says Gregory has been reluctant to embrace the role of trailblazer, and who can blame her? After all, none of her male colleagues have to worry about representing an entire gender. Still, she's increasingly aware that she has a role to play in the world of competitive esports, and that goes beyond winning games. She says, since I am the only female in the whole league, I think there are a lot of people who look up to me and see me as a role model. Knowing this, I'm trying a lot harder to inspire others to get to where I am today. So that's my story on Gregory. I hope she understands why a diary entry is being made about her story. I think there's a lot to learn about her as a person and as a player, and no doubt she's made a major impact on the world of gaming, whether she meant to or even wants to. And some people are just called to greatness, and she's one of them.
Thank you so much. I knew it feels like I knew everything about Gregory, but I knew nothing about Gregory. Like, you know, like you kind of pieced everything together. Because I feel that her story was so out there in the media and exaggerated, and the titles were kind of crazy, and people were always asking me, like, are you outraged about this? What do you think about this? Like, especially the housing situation. Like, everyone was asking me, and I'm like, it was really hard for me to piece the things together and have my own opinion. So I think that your research and your story here today is helping me kind of see it. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a tough one. Like, I get it. I get where she's at. I totally understand it. I think it's not her fault, but at the same time, she comes from a very sexist culture in a very sexist field.
Yeah.
And, you know, we want to believe that we want to get to the point in this world where our gender doesn't matter, where we're not discriminated against or thought differently because of it. But, you know, I think it did happen here in a couple different ways.
There's a lot of questions that are left unanswered for me. And I think that we haven't heard, like, this is the beginning of our journey, I hope. Mm-hmm. I feel like in 2 years, we should do a recap on Earth because it feels like, I wonder if because she's from South Korea as well, the impact that, like, you know, for me, for the longest time, I just wanted to be part of the boys, you know? I just wanted to be part of the club. Like, don't talk about my difference. I'm one of us, right? And I think for me, it was a journey to get out of that and be like, I know, actually, I am different. It doesn't mean you have to treat me differently, but it does mean that some things are different when it comes to me, and I have to accept it. And I think that I wonder if she's going to go through that or if she's just going to never want to get involved, which is also okay. Like I said, not everyone needs to wear that flag, right?
Yeah. It's, I mean, she's only like, what, 21 now, 20? Like, she's not very old. So there's a lot more ahead of her. I'm really hoping that's another team in the Overwatch League picks
her
up.
Yeah. You that know? For and, sure.
And to see her play, to be able to actually like see her.
So you see, she streams. Is she on Twitch or is she like on a Korean version? Oh, she's on Twitch.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. I'm gonna check it out.
Yeah. She's very self-deprecating.
What, really?
In her stream. Like, yeah, she's very self-deprecating. She's got like a funny little sense of humor from everything I've read. You know, people say like she's just the kind of person that you want to see happy. You want to see succeed. She's always kind of just apologizing for all of it, you know,
I mentioned it, I met her once and I couldn't believe how polite and like put together she was. And it does feel like it's also like a culture thing, right? Being South Korean, but she was just the cutest, always smiling, even though sometimes she doesn't understand or back then didn't understand everything. And just like I understand why people would want her to be happy. She's a little bit of a bubble, whether or not she wants to admit it. She's kind of cute as
F. She's cute. Yeah, she's totally cute. I I really wish everything like the best for her. Let me start that. I really wish the best for her. I want to see her succeed. And I'm really glad that we got to talk about her today. I'd love to hear your thoughts just as a competitor as well, like what that's like. But guys, thank you so much for listening to this episode of The Game Diaries. Please go ahead and subscribe to wherever you're listening on whatever podcast platform. And you can also watch us on YouTube. We do video versions of this as well.
Yes.
We love reading your reviews and comments. So please keep them coming.
We have a little channel on our Discord called Comments. So we do take screenshots and send to each other when you guys send us a cute comment, because we love it, and you get to see my eyeliner, guys. So go check out the YouTube version. And if, remember, if you have a story that you'd like to share about how video games impacted your life, please visit thegamediaries.com to submit your love letter to gaming. This was Miss Harvey and Michelle. See you next week on The Game Diaries.